Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Gregory Melville and Susan Fox and Kathleen Bromage.
This is Where We Live on Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil, broadcasting remotely. How are you working to build confidence and self-esteem in your daughter? How to raise bold, courageous, resilient women is part of the title of Dr. Marissa Porges' new book, What Girls Need. She's head of the Baldwin School, an all-girls school outside Philadelphia. And before leading the school, she was a White House fellow and a senior advisor for cybersecurity and technology policy at the National Economic Council. And she served as a counterterrorism policy advisor in the U.S. Departments of the Treasury and Defense and on active duty in the U.S. Navy, flying jets as a naval flight officer. Dr. Marissa Porges, welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me, Lucy. Great to be here.
I loved reading your personal stories weaved into this book about how both parents and educators can work to help young girls build skills that they will need when they become adults. In your book, you talk about losing your voice for the first time when you were training to be an aviator. Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, I can still remember it vividly, you know, many years later. And it was one of those moments I think a lot of young women have experienced themselves, but a time when you were shut down for just being a girl and maybe being a girl in a room where it's mostly men or mostly people who don't look like you or aren't, you know, familiar with a loud, audacious, bold woman speaking their minds. And you know, there was that time, and I was in college during military training, and there was a more senior, there was a senior officer who questioned my desire to step into a cockpit and fly jets. And it was because I was a girl. And he said, yeah, you know, I don't think that's what girls do. And, you know, it was long after I wouldn't have been the first. And so it wasn't a question of if women could do it. It was just whether it was the norm and expected. And I think there's still a lot of places where, even as we've been breaking barriers for many decades, there's still a lot of places where just gender norms and socialized ways of being can hold our girls back unless we start coaching them early on to have the muscle memory it takes to stand your ground, speak out, speak up, and really live your best self.
I think it's interesting you mentioned that this man made this comment to you while you were training to be an aviator when you were in college. So when we're in our young 20s, I know many women who are listening now, there were probably those moments where someone said something like that. And when I was 19, 20, I wouldn't have been able to speak up. But at 41, I sure would be able to say, let me tell you how you're wrong. Isn't it interesting how it takes years for us to build that kind of confidence to stand up for ourselves, Marissa?
I think so. And I think this is one of the things I've seen here at the school. I spent, you know, many years in outside of a school environment in a lot of male-dominated workplaces and fortunately, you know, had a lot of colleagues who did make room for me at the table, to use that metaphor. And yet I realized over time that it wasn't until my mid or late 20s that I got truly used to doing all the things that I think our girls need to do right out the gate. And so we don't want to wait until they're in their 40s or well into their career, or even stepping out of college or into college, to have honest conversations about what feels most comfortable to a young woman as they speak out and speak up, how they should compete, how they should feel comfortable communicating and being their best self. And I think there's easy ways we can start young, even in elementary school, in age-appropriate ways to help our girls practice the muscle memory it will take to really lean into these moments later on.
And we'll be talking about some of your advice, also based on what social scientists have observed in the way girls and boys relate to each other beginning very young. And again, how we can build those skills in girls to become strong women. But I wanted to ask you about another time in your book where you talk about being afraid to be assertive or speaking up. And it was a situation that not everyone find themselves in. You were in a room with the president, President Barack Obama. Tell us what happened.
Yes, and this is one of those, I've been telling the story more lately since the book came out, and I have to say it's slightly embarrassing because it's one of those moments when the cliche, cat got my tongue, but it happened in probably one of the most pivotal moments in my career, right? This moment I've been shooting for. I was in the West Wing, right outside the Oval Office in a small group private meeting with the President of the United States, the leader of the free world, some moment that I'd been waiting for and working towards for many years. And we were talking about, you know, national security, foreign policy, and debating the issues of the day. And I remember through the course of the entire hour-long meeting, in retrospect, not saying a word, literally letting, there was a lot of men around the table, and letting others speak up on issues that were my expertise, foreign policy, counterterrorism, Al-Qaeda, things like that. And it wasn't until afterwards that I realized that the narrative in my head had been, oh, I'll wait my turn. I'll have my chance. And I didn't grab that opportunity when it came. I had the good fortune of having a couple other opportunities with President Obama to speak my mind and have that moment when you're, a one-on-one with the leader of the free world behind the scenes talking about ISIS and Al-Qaeda. And so I did have the opportunity personally to make it up, but I don't want any young woman to ever be in the room for their top career moment and be, not have that competitive edge they need to feel comfortable speaking out and speaking up. And I think, again, there's little things we can do for our girls from elementary school on to help them practice that.
Can I ask, if your military background, when we think of the military as this male-dominated culture, even though many women are serving today, Marissa, do you feel like your experience in the military helped you today become a strong woman? I'm just curious, when you had that situation with when you were early on training to be an aviator and thinking about women who don't serve, I'm just curious if you could tell us a little bit about what that culture was like.
Well, I think it's where I learned a lot of the lessons that I now teach our girls, right? And this all came together in a leadership class I teach for our seniors here at the school I lead. And I started telling them more stories from moments when I was on the carrier, moments when I was in Afghanistan, moments when I was pushed myself and had to figure it out. I think that training is transferable, right? And so the moment that I had to figure out, for example, there was a one time I can remember it vividly, having to sign paperwork that absolved the U.S. military of any liability if I were to eject from my jet and get injured, because it turned out that the safety equipment hadn't been originally built or made for a woman my size, which, yes, I'm petite, but it's just the average size of a woman is much different than an average size of a man, and the weight and the height and the length of your limbs and all the rest. And it was a moment that at the time, in my early 20s, I kind of didn't even think about, and I just kept going. In retrospect, it was something that I think can be transferred into a lot of work environments for our women. That time when, you're questioned about what you're wearing because, you're wearing pants in an environment where until recently women weren't allowed to wear pants. For example, the floor of the U.S. Congress, which didn't allow women to wear pants until the late 90s, right? Mm. I mean, there are so many moments that we don't think about that our girls will face. And yeah, I learned it on the fly, pun intended, when I was in the Navy. But those same skills are things that we can teach. And I think every girl needs, whether or not they're going to be in uniform or on the front lines.
You're hearing Dr. Marissa Porges. She's the author of What Girls Need, How to Raise Bold, Courageous, and Resilient Women. We want to hear from you today as you think about how you're raising your children, especially your daughters, or when you think about your upbringing, what skills you wish you had learned back then that would help you as you're an adult woman today. When I think about how far we've come, Marissa, we think about the opportunities that women have today, but still in 2020, it is, there's a lot that barriers, challenges that we face. Women still make on average 82 cents for every dollar earned by men. Fewer women in the C-suite. When you think about the world that girls will be coming into at their first job when they graduate high school and college, what are some of the things that still worry you today for the girls that attend your all-girls school?
Yeah, I think, and you're exactly right. You look at the statistics and we think we've come so far, but there's still a lot of ways to go. And while the system is still changing and needs to be changed, and there should be a focus on that, building the systems and tools and ways of being that will welcome those young women in, I think we also need to help our girls feel personally confident in raising their voice, asking for what they need and being persuasive in that ask, and really learning how they can compete. What competition it looks like in a healthy way for our young women. I also think it's about really helping them leverage skills that come naturally to our young women, skills of empathy and communication and collaboration, which, you know, employers are hiring for as top skills right now and will continue to for years to come. So, you know, those are the places that our girls will have the easy advantage if we help them really nurture early on their personal approach to it.
Mm. Can you give us some more examples? I think about when women accept their first job offer and they build their careers, we're often faulted for not being better negotiators, or mm-hmm. when you're in a room with a bunch of men, not speaking up first. Tell us how social scientists have seen that play out from the time that children are young, and what we can learn from that as we think about building these skills in young girls today.
Yeah, it's those are both great examples that we can see play out. And we'll take the speaking up and the raising your voice one first, right? It's interesting to know that still to this day, in lots of public spheres, women do not speak out and speak up as often as men. Whether you're looking at the editorial columns in the New York Times and sort of the anonymous online commentators that come in newspapers, men out comment women, even in an anonymous online forum. But then you take another end of the extreme and you think of the Supreme Court, the highest court in the land. Female Supreme Court justices are spoken over, are interrupted at a vastly greater number, statistically speaking, than male Supreme Court justices. And here you think of women who, yes, by then have learned how to raise their voice. And so if that's still happening, how do we help our girls, our women, from an early age build the muscle memory they need to confidently speak up and in a way that feels comfortable for them speak out? Things that you can do when they're 10 years old. You know, a great example that I'm pulling from the girls at my school is having your daughter speak for you and for your family the next time you order dinner, the next time you order takeout, right? It's a reason to not go to your smartphone and your app, but instead pick up the phone and call the pizza place or Chinese takeout, or when we're next out of COVID and in a restaurant or at a museum or an amusement park, right? Putting your girl front and center and having her practice that moment. It may feel awkward, it may feel uncomfortable, but she will both remember that you have valued her voice and are trusting her to do so, and over time she'll feel comfortable figuring out what feels right for her. One of our girls who just graduated, she can remember the moment when she was 10 when her dad used to make her, not her brother, not her mother, she said, call for pizza. And she hated doing it. But over time, as she grew, she figured out a way that felt comfortable. And then when she was in middle school and she was having problem in a class or needed help, her parent won't step in. Her dad said, no, let's practice. And when he dropped her off in the morning, would say, okay, we practiced, now your turn. And would have the girl, even in middle school, figure out a way in class or after class to ask for what she needed. And this is a young woman who later on, you know, in high school was faced in a public environment with an incident of sexual harassment. And had the muscle memory and the confidence to respond in the moment and after speak up and speak out to a senior male executive and ended up reporting it in a very formal, forthright way and, you know, was able to get what she needed even in that really difficult moment. And that was as a teenager, right? And so here, I do think it starts early in really age-appropriate ways that we then grow our girls into the moments when they're at the Supreme Court or you know, reading an op-ed and want to comment, they'll feel like they can and should.
That's a great tip, having your daughter order the next time you get takeout or when at the moment when we'll be able to eat in restaurants again, Marissa. But what about children who are just naturally shy? I mean, how do you coach them to be more assertive?
Yeah. Well, and so this is, it's a good point, because we're not saying that an introvert has to be an extrovert. I will say that a shy girl should learn how to, you know, order food at the restaurant, because that's something that she will have to do as an adult, of course. But there are also ways, I mean, it's really about having, knowing your daughter and having, or any young girl in your life, your niece, you're the friend of a family, and helping her feel comfortable in her own shoes. Another great example is using online tools these days. They're widely available. One fun story or example that I'm also pulling from the students at my school was a young girl who really wanted a pet. And as it turns out, hedgehogs are illegal as pets in Pennsylvania. Who knew? And she was eager. She thought that was going to be her first pet. And so she started an online petition. Right, sent it. That was her more comfortable form of speaking out and speaking up. She was in elementary school, so ended up sending it to all the adults she knew, colleagues of her parents, and then to the state legislator. And before you know it, she was getting responses from the state legislator talking about a bill they put forward. It turns out that they did not pass a new statute to make hedgehogs legal. But here we have a young girl, you know, practicing a different way of speaking out, getting a response from adults, getting validation for the fact that speaking out and speaking up is a good thing. And over time, she'll grow more comfortable in other ways to do it that feel right for her. But again, it's not about making a shy girl not shy, but it's just helping them practice those muscle memories it takes for all of us, I think, over time to get comfortable speaking up.
You're hearing Dr. Marissa Porges. She's the author of What Girls Need, How to Raise Bold, Courageous, and Resilient Women. We're going to continue talking with Marissa after the break. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live on Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. What do girls really need to succeed? My guest, Dr. Marissa Porges, says children today need a new set of skills to succeed in a changing world, and girls must nurture essential traits before they become young women and enter a competitive job market, one that's still complicated by sexism and the possibility of harassment. She wrote a book about how parents can help their daughters become leaders and innovators. It's called What Girls Need, How to Raise Bold, Courageous, and Resilient Women. Marissa, I wanted to ask you, you make a point in your book that you're not arguing that women need to behave like men to succeed or conform to societal standards. So why do you believe girls need to learn skills like negotiating and competing?
Yeah, well, I think the challenge here is really questioning whether negotiating and competing are or should be considered male traits. Mm-hmm. I would argue that that's a historical norm, and in fact, both of those ideas should just be gender neutral, because they're skills that you know, any woman or man could say, yeah, you need them on a daily basis. You need to be able to negotiate for a lease or your first salary. And unfortunately, because of social norms, women haven't necessarily been coached or coached to do so early on, and they're at a disadvantage. Same thing with being competitive. One young girl I interviewed for the book, you know, she claimed that her, you know, competing's for boys, and she can remember a moment in a geography bee in fourth grade, when she was just in middle school then, so it had only been a few years, when she knew the answer but didn't give it in the, you know, semifinals of a geography bee because she didn't want to make her friends feel bad. And when we talked about it, and her mom, when hearing this, was aghast and said, well, but if you knew the answer, and she said, yeah, no, it was okay. I didn't need to show off. But competing isn't about showing off, right? It's about being your personal best. And, you know, this day and age, I think that's something every girl needs to say, yeah, I can do that too. It's not something for boys. It's something for all of us. And I think thinking of it in a healthy way, not a maladaptive way, not a win at all costs, but just a be your personal best. I think it's a really important thing. And being competitive actually helps you perform better. It's something that social scientists have shown really encourages you to be even better, whether or not you win or lose. So I think these are skills that every girl needs and should be not for boys only.
You also talk about parents should resist the temptation to not step in or be the advocate on behalf of their daughter. So tell us more about this, because we want to protect our children, but there's definitely a balance of how you teach your children to advocate for themselves.
Yeah, well, and this is where the sort of age-appropriate coaching, the way we think about coaching in an age-appropriate ways really comes in for parents. And it's hard to do, particularly as our girls enter middle school and junior high school, and we think, well, you know, it's such a difficult period for many kids, and How do we be there for them throughout? And yet these are the perfect moments because by and large, they're going to be at school where their teachers and coaches and their advisors are there looking out for them, are there wanting to support them. It's a safe place for them to try out how they feel works for them personally, speaking out, right? Again, whether it's the, you know, sending an email when you need help, whether it's raising your hand and speaking up, whether right now when kids are learning virtually, a great question for parents to ask isn't, you know, how class went, but did you ask a question? Did you ask a question over chat? Did you email it to your parent? Did, you know, what did it look like and how did it work for you? And I think, you know, one thing to consider is whether or not you institute a 24-hour rule, right? This idea that every problem that comes up, do you pause and wait 24 hours before a parent jumps in? By and large, particularly in preteen and teenage years, a lot of the problems in 24 hours have subsided and we can, you know, calm ourselves down, our girls down, and realize that a lot of it works itself out. But then it's also this moment to say, okay, now what, right? And can you coach your girl to, you know, figure out a solution on her own that feels right? Because that's what's gonna, she's gonna need in college and, you know, formidably when she's gonna need it in work and beyond. It's what will empower her most. And I do think these are skills that can be taught early on in a way that feels comfortable and personal to our girls.
Kelly wrote on Facebook, I learned to use language to encourage my daughter to be proud of herself. I try not to say I'm proud of her. She needs to own it and not seek the approval of others. How proud do you feel is what she asks. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I think so many things. It's great to hear, Kelly, because I think a lot of it is the language we use, right? How we reinforce the value of their voice and not make it about us as adults, but make it about them. You know, an interesting thing to consider in the same vein is when we share lessons and stories with our kids, social scientists have shown that lessons of failures, lessons of hiccups stick best, stick more, are the ones that we remember. So the next time we're trying to reinforce a moment with our kids and we think, oh, I'm going to say that lesson I overcame, I sort of, you know, got on the bus and did a good job, I went to my first overnight sleepover and it went okay. And those are the moments that sometimes our girls don't connect with and don't remember. So maybe it's the a lesson of failure, a lesson of something that didn't work out. Where we said, yeah, but it was okay over time, right? That first time I went to a sleepover and I woke up and I was upset all night, but this is what I did about it. The first time when I was in high school and I didn't speak up and this is what happened. And the next time I corrected it this way. So it's an interesting thing to think about this, both the stories and the language we share with our kids and our girls, because they hear everything and the small things matter a lot. And that's one of the lessons in my book is it's not about being the perfect parent. It's just about thinking of little small ways that we can continue reinforcing the best in our girls.
Marissa, you talk about the importance of healthy competition, but losing is hard. And when we think about all of the demands on children today, teenagers, before they head out to college, if that is their choice, you know, the fear of losing with, and making them feel like, well, maybe I don't want to be competing next time. I mean, how do you help students grapple with that so that they continue to have confidence? Like, don't be afraid to try again.
Yeah, well, and this is particularly for young women where perfectionism is a struggle for a lot of teenage girls. And we need to get them used to, candidly, get them used to failure, right? Get them used to the failure and the little f, right? We all think back to the stuff that we thought was failures when we were kids, and it's nothing, right? It's the lips of life. You know, one way to do it is to normalize quote unquote failure, right? Normalize the hiccups that are everyday parts of life. You know, one thing that some families I know practice is that they call highs and lows or thorns and petals. And on a daily basis, they share the, you know, the hiccups, the failures of the day, as well as the up moments. And it normalizes over time the sense that both as adults, we still have these moments. So it's sharing over the dinner table. It can make 5 minutes on the car ride home from school or around the dinner table if they're learning virtually at home or whatever that moment is to say, yeah, high and low from the day, a blip and something that worked well, right? And it can be simple as, yeah, as an adult, we would say, I replied all to an email or I shot my boss something and it was, you know, incorrect or I had this moment that just happens normally and we get used to, but in the girl's minds, that's something that they struggle with. But then ask your daughter to share too, right? And say, ah, you know, I, and you know, one of the girls that I know who practices says, yes, and I, this is when I share that everything from I fell in skating in a competition to, you know, I forgot my homework to, you know, the dog chewed my backpack, right? But then there was also the fun moment that I got something right, or I saw a friend, or something worked out. And when we help them balance those two realities and realize that it's not such a big deal, you know, it's, this isn't the big failure. This isn't sort of those moments where we need to get there and pick them up. It's the moments every day they need to get used to diving back into the competition.
You know, we've spent some time talking about competition, Marissa, but I was thinking about collaboration and how women are naturally good at collaborating and working together as a team. Can you talk about why that is?
Yeah, well, and this is a fantastic fantastic research that's come out just recently as we've grown more attentive to how we collaborate and coordinate, because it's such an important skill any place you look in any work environment or even on the home front too. And yes, there's a recent study that showed interviewed and studied teenage kids, boys and girls around the world, 125,000 15-year-olds, and demonstrated that girls were statistically speaking better at problem solving in teams, collaborating in groups than boys. They on average outperformed the boys by 30 points and were 1.6 times more likely to be rated top performers in this critical skill. It comes down to, again, things that have been socialized in terms of how they communicate with each other from an early age, how young girls are encouraged to find consensus, how they're encouraged to think of the other as they navigate even sort of that moment in pre-K where they're sharing toys. And a lot of it is just socialized ways of being. And yet, we see it now as such a critical skill, such a competitive advantage for girls. And so I think it's something that, you know, it's about helping them lean into their best selves and saying, no, that's great. And so this is where, from a parent's perspective, you think it's about asking the question when they come home from school, not how did it go, but what happened with your lab partner? What happened in that team project? What happened when it wasn't going well? What did you do next with your partner or lab mate? Because those are the moments that, when we reinforce the behaviors that take communication, collaborative thinking, problem solving in certain different ways, it reinforces this sense that that's really what we want to nurture in our girls, and they'll lean into it more and more.
David's calling into the show. And David, what's your question or comment for Marissa?
Hi, Marissa. This is a wonderful show. I'm really enjoying it. My son is an engineer, and he started his first job about a year ago. But during the interview process, he went from intern, and they interviewed him for the job. He had in his mind a number for what the cost should be, what the salary should be. And the interviewer from HR was a woman, and she went, you know, there was a negotiation process, and they came out in the middle, and he told me about it. I thought, that sounds great. You know, your starting point's very important. I'm glad you negotiated it up a bit. They went low, he went high, they came out in the middle. At some point later, the woman who was the interviewer told him that, yeah, for guys, she always goes a little lower because guys always negotiate up. And had he been a woman that she was interviewing, she would have gone right to the middle number. And they would have arrived at the same salary as starting engineers, but the process would have been different. And I'm just curious your thoughts on that. Is this woman sort of enabling the status quo, or is she evening the score?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. What a fantastic story, David. Thank you for sharing. It's a very interesting thing, and you think, well, at least in one example, we have a system trying to correct for what is a historic disparity between women. And we talked about between women and men. We talked early on in the show about the pay gap, right? That women are paid 82 cents on the dollar still to this day for what the same job a man does. And so here we see, maybe I would argue the system's maybe correcting for itself, because it sounds like in the HR sense, she's still ending up at the same even point for starting engineers and then getting the same salary. But statistically speaking, because in this day, women do not negotiate. Even those who've been coached and trained in negotiating, those who are graduating from MBA programs, When they're graduating, a study showed that a mere 7% of women asked for more money during this opening negotiation for their first job. In comparison, 57% of the men negotiate. So I'm glad that it worked out for your son, David, but I do think that unfortunately most women are not positioned. They don't have the muscle memory. They don't have the skills to think, to know that, yeah, you have to negotiate your first job. And if you don't, you are behind the curve for the rest of, unfortunately, the rest of your career, since oftentimes job salaries are benchmarked on your last job. And over many years, you can, hundreds of thousands of dollars can be left on the table. But more importantly, the sense that, you know, we're not closing that final mile in the gap of different norms and different gender gaps. So I would argue that, again, it's this a bit of a system correcting for itself, because it sounds like it was equitable in the end. But I do think it's a really good story to think about when we're talking about young women. How do we get them to ask for what they need? How do we get them to know that in that first job at the pizza parlor at the summer camp, you know, they try negotiating. It doesn't matter if it works out or not, right? Because it's about the muscle memory of knowing you have to ask, right? Even something, you know, even earlier on, how do they get persuasive when they're asking for something they want with their families? You know, a fun story again that I learned from my girls here at the school is, you know, when one of them said that when she's asking for something for her from her parents, whether it's a sleepover on a weeknight or a new toy or some exception to a rule at home, she has to pitch for it. Her parents asked her to come back with three reasons, and she showed me one of her PowerPoint presentations over time. She decided to make a PowerPoint, and the best one I saw was the PowerPoint that argued for a sleepover on a Thursday night, and it showed the cupcakes they wanted to make, the movie they wanted to show, and the tents they wanted to build in the living room. And the reality is I have no idea if they got their, if the this girl got her ask. It didn't matter, but it was a sense that her parents wanted her to ask, wanted her to persuade, wanted her to practice the muscle memory she'll need when she's going for that first engineering job, just like your son. So thank you for sharing the story, because I think it's a great example for us to all think about.
I love thinking about that negotiating, like muscle memory, and why we need to instill that in girls early on. Dr. Marissa Porges is my guest today. She's head of the Baldwin School, an all-girls school in Pennsylvania, and author of this new book, What Girls Need, How to Raise Bold, Courageous, and Resilient Women. We'll continue talking with her after the break. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live on Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. My guest today, Dr. Marissa Porges, head of the Baldwin School and author of What Girls Need, How to Raise Bold, Courageous, and Resilient Women. Marissa, you spend time in your book talking about empathy and why that is important. When we were thinking about this show, the question of, does empathy get a bad rep, equating it to being too sensitive? How do you address that concern?
Yeah, I think this is something that's changed over time in the past, you know, 5 to 10 years, as leaders in the private sector, in the public sector, and at the corporate world and everywhere have realized that empathy is actually something that drives the bottom line, something that makes you a better leader, a better manager. It's interesting to know that even old school traditional companies like Ford Motor Company have started teaching their engineers empathy. They make new engineers wear what's called the empathy belly. It is actually an outfit that mimics the feeling of being a third trimester pregnant woman. It has a belly, and it sort of tightens the feelings in your chest. And they have their engineers get in and out of Ford cars to practice what it feels like to be a 9-month pregnant woman navigating a standard car, so that those engineers can help design with empathetic thinking in mind, understanding the perspective of the customer to better engineer and design things that will improve the customer's experience. You think empathy is helpful, going back to our military conversation earlier, you know, leaders in Afghanistan and Iraq, when I was there, I can remember hearing from General McMaster, who would say, empathetic thinking is what's going to help us win the war. Understanding what the other needs and how we help keep that perspective in mind is going to make us better soldiers for the people that we're leading in our platoon. And it's something that I saw firsthand when I was doing research, interestingly, on counterterrorism. I can remember sitting across from a former Al-Qaeda recruiter, right? And my ability to empathize with him, as crazy as it sounds, and be able to share moments that took his perspective in mind, helped us navigate really tricky moments and helped me figure out how to advise the U.S. government and foreign government officials on what to do next in combating terrorist groups. Now, take that and translate it to what our girls are thinking and doing. They are natural empathizers. From an early age, our young girls are encouraged to find consensus, to think about their friends and classmates, to think about how to take those perspectives in mind on a daily basis. And we want to encourage that. We want to nurture it, not because it's of the golden rule, not because it's the girly thing to do, but actually because it's going to make them better in the workforce. It's going to make them better on the home front when they're older. So it's a really interesting moment in time when we can think about how this skill becomes some competitive advantage for our young women later on.
Janet's calling from Torrington. Janet, what's your question?
Oh, thanks. Good morning. It's not really a question. I think I'm going to make it a comment. I have been in the corporate world for all of my career, and I have raised, and my husband and I have raised, two very independent, strong young women. One is 24 and has been out on her own for 4 years. The other is a senior in high school. And my comment is they are spectacular, witty, bright young women. But the, I think, for me, the consequence or the repercussion of raising strong, independent women is then there's some worry that comes with their independence in, you know, moving around and taking on new jobs. And so I think that's just an interesting piece of, for us, and I know for a lot of my friends, you do have to back off and you give up that control. But there is a ongoing parental worry, I think, with that strong independence.
Well, that's an interesting comment. Marissa.
Thank you, Janet, and thank you for sharing that. And I'm so proud to hear how strong and audacious it sounds like your girls are. It's a good thing to remember, and I think all parents would feel this way, but particularly for our girls, because, you know, as we know, the system isn't entirely there yet, and they're still going to face the daily hurdles, and when they're independent, they might face them on their own. And then I'm going to challenge my own statement there about facing them on their own. And one of the conclusions in my book, but also in my career and in my work here at the school, is that we need to remind our young women that they're never fully alone. They may be independent, but that they should have a team alongside them, but it may not be their parents, right? And I have to say that, you know, my team has included girls I graduated high school with, girls that I played sports with, women that I served with, men that I served with in the military who I still call today when I need something. And the texts I have this week coming in from former colleagues who are cheering me on and my new role of opening a school during a pandemic. And I think the thing to remind your daughters, Janet, and remind all our girls is, yes, we want them to be independent, but independence should be coming with a team alongside them. And men do this, right? Men, you know, count on mentors and sponsors. It's something that is sort of naturally part of their network, right? We want our young women to invest in that network equally effectively and equally often, because that's how they will not be alone when they hit their struggles, even if their parents are not alongside them. So Janet, I hope that we can remind your daughters that, because they'll be fine when they have people to turn to.
We just have a few minutes left, Marissa, and I was thinking about adaptability, something else you talk about in your book, something that all of us have struggled with in this pandemic. But I wanted to read this comment from Jeremy on Facebook. He wants to hear how you support girls who may be less independent than their peers due to disability or clinical anxiety. How might your approach differ or not when considering the intersection of gender with disability and difference, Marissa?
Yeah, thank you. I think this is where it's about knowing your daughter, knowing your girl, knowing your student when you're a teacher, and finding little things you can do differently. And we have students here who are struggling with a lot of, whether it's personal, physical challenges, things that they need help on. And that's the nature of growing up these days, right? And we want to make sure that we can still push them, because the reality is just about finding different ways to present that challenge. And so I would say that it just may look different. This is where that first challenge may not be going to overnight camp. It may be something closer to home. It may be something around your dinner table, right? Helping a girl speak out in those environments will be equally empowering. And so I would say that these skills are applicable to all our girls, no matter what personal struggles or challenges they may face in different ways, no matter their socioeconomic or racial background, because, you know, being able to speak up, being able to negotiate, being able to empathize and adapt are things all our young women need regardless.
As I mentioned, Marissa, we're almost out of time, but I just wanted to ask you one more question when we think about adaptability. How do you encourage your girls to get outside their comfort zone?
Yeah. Well, I think this is about building those moments of outside your comfort zone into the normal day, and really helping the girls be resilient. One thing we do here is we actually, I would say, grade resilience, because it's not about the grade. It's about the comment that comes alongside it. One of the things we do when our girls are taking computer science and engineering in middle school is part of the rubric for assessment. It actually says, what happened when you struggled, right? And the comments are, did you turn to a friend? Did you keep trying? Did you talk to a teacher? Or did you give up, right? Did you stop? And the idea here isn't about the grade and the outcome, because in seventh grade, it doesn't really matter, right? But it's about reinforcing this idea that the trick is to brush yourself up and try again. It's why we build sports into the school day for our girls. And for listeners out there, sports are a great and easy way to build adaptable thinking, because we have to be adaptable in any team we play on. There's other things we can do, particularly now during the pandemic, right? And I think it's about modeling our own adaptability, right? One of the moments of adaptability that I showed all our girls here was the first time I jumped on Zoom for an all-school assembly back in March, when the first week we went all remote. And I have to say, it was a ginormous failure, right? We were all trying to figure it out together. But sharing the story and that reality, and so parents, when you're having the struggle at what work looks like remotely or what how we're navigating it, and saying, yeah, it's okay. We're getting started in a new world. Right now, we have our girls showing up for class and we're saying, you know, we're adapting to this together. And that's, you know, it's going to be a challenge for us all. But these are particularly exceptional moments to help our girls practice adaptability. And I think this generation of young women will be more adaptable than any other because of what this pandemic is forcing us all to do and forcing us all to model. And so this is where role modeling is as important as anything for our kids.
Dr. Marissa Porges, again, head of the Baldwin School and author of this great book, What Girls Need, How to Raise Bold, Courageous, and Resilient Women. Marissa, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for being here. I look forward to hearing from readers. And please pick up my book on Amazon or wherever you pick up your books these days.
I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Today's show produced by Tess Terrible. Our technical producer is Kat Pastor. You can learn more about the show. Just download Where We Live on your favorite podcast app. Thanks for listening.